Hello and welcome to Promenade Culture Center. This is Culture Corner. We bring you the authentic stories of creative individuals. We're pleased to have a great guest today, Razan Al-Saraf, artist and educator and a friend of Promenade Culture Center. Razan, welcome to Culture Corner.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me.
I
wanted to say welcome to Promenade Culture Center as well, but you've been around a few times. Yes. But it's the first time in the podcast, which is a great opportunity for us to talk to you about some other aspects of your work and life that we haven't so far. And I want to ask you something in the beginning that I normally ask later. If you had a few things, important things, to give as a piece of an advice or encouragement to artists just starting their artistic path here in Kuwait, what would those be?
Oh, big question. I would say follow your intuition on what you think important art is. Like, have a genuine internal guide of what you think you need to talk about. And then just do the work, like just actually do the art, even if no one's looking, even if you don't have the funding, even if you don't have a studio. I think just like being able to create and have that practice of like consistent creating is going to get you way further than if you were like thinking about what to do and how to plan and like where to, you know, what people to talk to. Like, that all comes later. So I think that would be my biggest piece of advice.
I like that because it's very consistent in the moment where you're doing something.
Yeah.
It's leaving certain anxieties on the side for the time when it's time for them and then just focusing on work.
Exactly. It leaves the commercial side out of it too because then you don't get co-opted by whatever you need to do to, you know, survive financially. Like, this should be a thing that you do for yourself first and then you can move into it being your career.
We were discussing just prior to taping how we don't often have a situation where artists have immediately, you know, pursued art at the university level, and you have done so. And can we go to that? Was it linear? You know, was it always something you knew you were going to do?
Yeah.
How was it while you were in school here? And what kind of support you needed, either from, you know, environment or family or school, to get to where you got in the end?
Yeah, I've always wanted to make art. I'd never thought of it as a career until high school, but I was still stuck between a couple different majors. And my mom gave me some really good advice, which was what are you going to be happy waking up to daily? So all the business ideas I had were out of the window because I wasn't going to wake up and do accounting or marketing, like just personally. But what inspired me or what made me feel comfortable or excited to do, to get out of bed for, was both art, like visual arts and culinary arts. And those are like the two main schools I applied to. I applied to a culinary arts school in Miami, Johnson & Wales, and I applied to SVA in New York. And I applied to a couple other fluff schools for marketing just in case I didn't get into the stuff I wanted to do, just to have some kind of, you know, like a quote unquote real job or real major. Thankfully, didn't get into the marketing schools, but got into both the visual art and culinary arts one. And then it was between Miami and New York as cities. And that's how I decided to move.
I was unaware of this culinary journey of yours. Can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, I've always loved
What were you imagining
cooking.
you would do with that? And
I've always wanted to have my own restaurant. I've always wanted to like cook for people and explore different, you know, cuisines and flavors and combinations and experiences with food. I used to cook a lot, and I had a bakery when I was in high school that I just remembered. And that was fun because we did bake sales and were part of different like fairs and festivals in the school and stuff. But yeah, in my head, like, not a lot of people were studying that in Kuwait, and it would have been really fun to do it and come back and then start something here. But then, yeah, when it came down to choosing visual arts, I went in that direction, but I still continued cooking. So I ended up having like a cooking job in New York, where I, just cooked for people in this cabin upstate. So I'd go for like a 2 to 3 day weekend and just come up with a whole menu, breakfast, lunch and dinner and snacks. And that was like the therapy for me and getting out of the city for a little bit. And also just continuing the culinary arts kind of passion on the side. And I love to eat.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. I can relate to that. Here in Kuwait, while you were growing up, now that you look at that from this perspective, what did you do that crafted the way for you, the path for you as an artist? What were your some of your interests? No, I meant actually also before, yeah. Some things you can remember as those moments where, you know, artist in you was winning.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Color Me Mine was a huge part of my childhood. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time there just painting on plates and tiles and objects. And they had summer programs there, so I took those. And then in my house, we had a shared room, me and my siblings, where we get to, you know, our little playroom. And my corner was always the art section. So I just had a bunch of materials and always asked for more and was just in there playing and making a mess. And I think over time, yeah, and in school, just doodling and then painting for fun. So it's always been something that I did aside from all the things I had to do. And then, yeah, it only became like a serious decision to pursue as a career when I was in high school, trying to pick majors.
Do you feel we're too young when we're asked to choose?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's too much pressure on high school students to like dictate the future of their entire lives. But I think nowadays people are realizing that a lot of people are delaying going to school or going to school and realizing that some degrees are not the end all be all. Like you don't have to have an art degree to be an artist. You don't have to have, there are certain jobs that you need to have a degree into, you know, like medicine. But yeah, I think it's a lot of pressure. I think we need to put more emphasis on getting high school students to tune in with themselves more than what they think a good career is. And I think that's the biggest, like, maybe downfall of, like, this kind of culture. Because I taught high school students on and off, and their biggest struggle is not even having time to realize what they care about because they're so pressured into performance and memorizing and executing and grades. So, I think we need more emphasis on, like, exploring all kinds of passions, giving them different outlets so that they can try out 10, 20 different things and then that will click for them.
It feels they're spent by the time they're actually supposed to be very enthusiastic about things.
Yeah,
and
exhausted.
Unfortunately, that even goes from my experience, from what I can see, even with arts and arts programs in schools. They're also just this amount of projects and this number of paintings and, you know, it feels it drains them completely, and only the ones who are really, really, absolutely certain about doing this kind of persevere. And then a lot of potential artists are lost along the way. But what's even worse, a lot of enthusiasts are killed inside, it feels.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually didn't take any art classes in high school because of that. So I kind of skipped that phase because I took it for a little bit and I dropped it because it was very much about deadlines and doing a specific theme in a specific way. It wasn't that creative. It was more just like technical and execution, which is fine, but you can learn that on the side. But I don't think you should be graded on how well you draw a circle, you know what I mean? Or how well you do a portrait. Like they should be more art classes that favor creative thinking and critical thinking and understanding the like gray areas of how to manipulate reality for big thoughts, you know, and not so much like accurate, you know.
So you find yourself in New York at what age? How old are you at the time?
I was 17 when I first went and then came back to get my license when I was 18 and then went again to start college. It was, best decision ever. Best city in the world. it was an incredible time. And this was like pre-COVID time. So New York was like still kind of New York. You know, it's a little sketchy in some areas, but really cool in other areas. It's full of artists, full of really passionate, incredible people that want to pursue big goals. And everyone's there to kind of support each other in that. There's like something for everyone. And there's a million different undergrounds and spaces and corners where a million things are happening. And they're always almost at the forefront of what culture can be and what culinary arts can be and what visual arts can be. Like it's very forward thinking.
Is it easy to inhale it all, to absorb it all?
Yeah.
Your way?
I just walked a lot. Like I just walked outside, which I really miss. Like that was a big part of what I realized my inspirations came from, because you just walk down the street and you'll hear seven different accents and then move into a store and it's like this random, you know, like Indian samosa store, and then you'll move down the street and it's this like super fancy American Michelin star restaurant. And you move down that street and you find like a Yemeni guy cooking meat and chicken. And then not just food wise, like the galleries are all like artists run, especially in Brooklyn and Queens and like parts of the Lower East Side. A lot of really passionate people just doing what they want and having the space for that and having the support for that. So it was just super inspirational. There was no day that went by where I didn't feel life, you know, like the force of life in the cheesiest way.
So I'm very curious. You've shared already something, but I'm still curious about that big change that falls on a very young person you were at the time. Moving, you've probably traveled before, but this is the first time you're living somewhere else, mm-hmm. and kind of enrolling in a different system of education and life. I don't know if you had any friends at the time there and so on, but it's like you're thrown into this abyss of creative madness, which is so great on one hand, and then very challenging on the other.
Yeah.
How do you align those, if you remember, between the obligations you have towards the school, realizing you're on something that you chose as your path, potentially future path, and also just living far away from family in a completely different context, no matter how great it is?
I think like high school was so challenging and suffocating that like leaving was great. It was like liberation, pure freedom.
I can picture that.
And then having that coupled with all my classes being something I really wanted to learn and something I really wanted to be part of, I like loved school again. High school made me kind of hate school to a certain degree. I've always loved like learning and like, you know, being taught by people that are professional in their fields. I loved getting insights on what they were thinking about. But the structure of high school, where it's just like, you know, you have to do a thing for a grade, for a certain outcome in a certain way, that's what I didn't enjoy. So having art school be the school I was going to, where like you come up and your homework is to think about cool ideas, you know, or like read a couple of books, or like go to the museum and like analyze a painting, or like go to a gallery and like redraw something you saw, or like talk to an artist, or go to specific buildings and like understand their history. Like it felt like school and life were intermeshed with each other, where it's like my experience of living and walking around the city was also my education. And then coming back to school and sharing that with like people from all over the world, with really cool teachers that were also practicing artists at the time. It was just, like the best. I have like no complaints.
I'm really glad to hear that. That's a rare experience.
Maybe, I can understand that.
Yeah. I think even though it's not the end of the world when you realize you're not in the right place and you need to change things, but we've also like shared a lot of those stories here as well. Mm-hmm. And it's fine, I guess, finding your path. But you were probably either very wise or a little bit lucky too, to find it at get-go. So I am interested a little bit more about the time there that you spent, and given what type of an artist you are nowadays, and who knows your art realizes that, you know, there's a specific language, a specific narrative behind it. Mm. You leave a stamp, like it's recognizable. Was this found there? Like, is this what you found while you were studying there?
And, yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember like some really prominent teachers when I was in undergrad, like John Jarache, who's this Lebanese American teacher who paints into sculptures. And he asked me like really big questions, you know, like, can you paint something you're not allowed to paint? Mm. Or can you paint something that means more to you than just the aesthetics? Or why are you using this language? Is it just because it looks good, or does it have a meaning behind it? And those are just like freshman year, you know, like me thrown into the world of like the combination of critical thinking with art making. So it started with there, where I always questioned why I was using certain materials and why I was using certain compositions and why I was painting certain images. And then that moved on to the world of abstraction very slowly, but also it's always been there, where I always like to use the blurring of representational images to talk about the the confusion or the obfuscation of truth in reality. And I don't know if we're going too deep into like the artwork right now, but I've always been interested in kind of finding the essence of a thing and the triggers of what they are visually, and then using that to kind of challenge the audience to get them to think about what they're implying into the work, especially with me at that time and still in life being labeled as a certain thing, which is like a female Arab, and that was the biggest awakening, I think, in America or the States in general, is that when you're there, you're instantly compartmentalized into a thing that can be labeled and can be understood as this like 2D thing, where like you are not just an artist or a person, you are an Arab and you are, you know, a feminist, or you are and those labels were obviously very confusing and triggering, but then also interesting to pry into and see where did they come from and what do they imply and how are those labels affecting how people are treating me and how are they affecting what I'm doing into the world? What are my responsibilities as someone with that label, and like what are my responsibilities in defying those labels?
Do you feel do you feel that artists do carry this responsibility to kind of always speak about the identities?
Absolutely. Not just
whatever
identities,
those
but
might be.
I mean, artists have a responsibility of speaking up in general, but understanding the context of how you're doing it and why you're doing it, because everything is inherently political, especially if you're creating. So you have to have a direction in what that heads towards. You can't just, you know, make a piece of work and then just have it exist on its own in a vacuum, because it doesn't. It exists in relation to the people that see it, in relation to how you made it, everyone that came in before that helped you produce the work, and then where it's exhibited and how many people are coming to see it, what kind of space it's exhibited in, what country it's exhibited in. So there's what time in life, in history, it's being done in, because that's like, I think, the most significant is understanding your context in real time and why you're doing what you're doing. So yeah, definitely artists have responsibility for that. Do all of them take that responsibility? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of wiggle room where like aesthetics can take over concept, and that's fine. It's just not what I'm passionate about or what I want to be part of.
I recently went to a conference, and a gentleman spoke really passionately about the whole situation in the world. And even though we were all very serious, he seemed, a tone above us, you know.
Interesting.
Can we just all realize how important art and culture is and how there is no life without it? And can we please ask for the space at that table where decisions are made?
Yeah.
And even though it's constantly on agenda, you know, culture and arts, it's very visible. You just take one look at where it is in terms of political decisions and you realize. But at the same time, and we see that in a deeply disturbing, polarized world we live in, when you want to try to destroy someone, you aim at arts and culture, you aim at natural resources, you aim at whatever the cultural identity is. So I like that. I like that he said it's time for us to take that rightfully, you know, own place by culture and arts, and to demand certain things, because there's no survival without this. Artists and writers, and I mean, do play that role tremendously in any sort of difficult time in history.
Absolutely.
You moved later from New York. We're going a little bit chronologically, because I'm interested, how did LA come after New York, and why, and what did that bring you?
So after about 5-ish years in New York, I wanted to apply to grad schools, and there's a window for scholarships as well, so that was part of the time thing. Otherwise, I would have just waited much longer, because I don't think you need to be in grad school this early, but that's the context of the situation. And I wanted to stay in the States, so I applied to a bunch of grad schools around both East Coast and the Midwest and the West Coast. Got into several schools, and then the final decision was, what's the most extreme thing I can do right now? and is it, you know, staying in New York, where I got accepted to some schools there and just like continue building what I already started? Or is it to move to Chicago, which I was considering, which is kind of like diet New York, but also still a much cooler and less commercial version of New York, where people still exist almost in sync with their environment, as opposed to New York, where like the environment is, you know. Or go to the completely opposite coast and just try to figure things out there and start from scratch again. And the school that I got into in California was CalArts, which is known for being a very conceptual, theoretical, thinky school, where you're not even obligated to come up with a physical project for your thesis, so long as you're thinking and can maybe write about it. So I was like, yeah, SVA was a very... also conceptual, but very technical school too, where they taught you how to use materials and how to build things and how to, you know, the wood shop and the clay studio and all of that stuff. Where CalArts was more about like, what are your theories? What are your concepts? What do you care about? And how are you going to forward that through art? So I did that. And then I was like, let's see what the West Coast is about. Pretty cool decision, horrible timing, because I got into it 2020 in fall. So I was stuck in Kuwait in between. And then I couldn't go to LA for my first year of grad school because of COVID. So I had to do my first year in Kuwait on West Coast time. So I was up at like 8 p.m. doing a 9 p.m. class and then going to bed at sunrise. And it just like completely messed up everything. But it was still a vibe because, you know, we had nothing else to do during COVID. So it was nice to be in a virtual space with a lot of cool thinkers. And because it was in a technical and physical based school, it kind of worked. I wasn't mad that I didn't have a studio, and I wasn't mad that I didn't have facilities because I wasn't going to use them anyway. So that happened. And then 2021 is when I moved there and then did my second year of grad school. Super fun, crazy, crazy, crazy place. It's a purely art school. So you have music, you have theater, dance, visual arts, film, animation, all in the same building in the middle of nowhere in the woods. And it was founded by Disney, which, you know, maybe red flag, but also as a concept, pretty cool. Like someone who just forwarded play and creating, as opposed to, you know, maybe the East Coast schools that are more about like, okay, we're going to connect you with galleries and you're going to be connected with art critics and curators, and you're going to have this career when you graduate so you can carry the name of your school. And like CalArts didn't care about any of that, which I really liked. So that was a lot of fun. And then I spent a year there working, opened a studio with some friends from grad school that had a shared gallery space. So we hosted some exhibitions there and like reading groups and workshops, screenings. It's still going on. It's a little bit slower now that I'm not there. And like some people have been moving in and out, but it's a place I still am attached to, that I'm like remotely working on, and then hopefully can visit soon once things maybe cool down. But yeah, LA was magical. That's when I also moved into like more of like my musical side of the of my practice, with like like making music or like DJing or curating playlists, or just making sound art or going to a lot of sound art shows, music videos, because LA is like the hub for all entertainment and all arts in the world, I would say, at least production wise.
Yeah,
like people go there to produce and to create and to pitch to distributors and all of that. So there's a lot of really cool people that live there, really incredible underground scene as well, and very hands-on, very DIY. It is the most like historically speaking the most like recently colonized place of the US, so it doesn't feel as, you know, hyper capitalist and crazy as like the East Coast, where there's like all these rigid systems and rules and people in charge of things. LA feels more like lateral, where you can kind of just go into this corner and this corner and this corner. It's kind of like Kuwait, where there's like a bunch of these like little bubbles spaced out, and you kind of have to like want to be in it to find it, type of thing. So once you're in it, there's like a bunch of just really cool, genuine people that are trying to pursue also similar goals, and are very supportive, very like family oriented, and cozy, and welcoming. So yeah, that was a refreshing
You
kind of.
had two really great experiences.
Yeah,
And
I'm
now
super
that you
grateful.
have mentioned your practice, can we talk about that? What is your art? What kind of art do you practice? What do you do? What do you create? For those who don't know, but also for those who know but like need to understand now in this new perspective you're giving us.
So my work in general revolves around the interactions of people with land and landscape in the most like umbrella term. And that can be either culturally, topographically, spiritually, ritualistically, or in terms of politics, so like colonization and the extraction of land and in building infrastructure. So those are like the big themes that I kind of research and think about because all of my work starts with research and a bunch of reading. And then the output is illustrations or depictions or like maybe formally produced artworks that favor process more than the outcome. So like more conceptual work, but I use that in like quotations for people that can't see. Yeah, those are like the big wordy words of what I do. In basic terms, I kind of look at, I can talk about project to project. I think that'll be a lot easier without visual cues. But so my I think oldest or first big project was called the Hooded Figure Series, and that was a bunch of ink paintings on canvas. And it started with me just pouring ink on canvas and seeing where it fell, and then kind of following that. But they ended up all being these little mountainous shapes.
These are the ones we saw at Sultan recently, or
Yes.
yes, okay.
So the Sultan version is like a more developed version of that, but that's where it started. So it started in New York in 2018, 2017 or 18. And so I was just pouring ink on canvas. I was just following abstraction and trying to be like all like I'm intuitive and I'm following the ink because it sits on the can whatever, you know. I was just in school and having fun. And once I put it up in class for critique, people were like, "Oh, are these women in abayas?" And I was like, "Wow, so interesting." You guys immediately saw that because I was standing next to it. But what would happen if the painting was just there without me? So I tried to do that in a little experiment where I put the work in a space and I had people look at it and didn't tell them that it was me. They're like, "Oh, these are like Chinese ink mountain paintings or like Sumi ink landscapes." And I was like, "Interesting." So that was the beginning of me being like, okay, this is what people are implying about my work because of me physically being there or my name physically being around it. So what does it mean if I use that to trigger different responses from them to see how they think or what their politics of perception are? So then I did this series as an assignment to paint monsters, but I ended up painting different terrorists at that time. And that was projected onto like 100 faces, like into canvas on oil paint. Also, didn't t tell them who the people were, but just put the faces up there. And I got different reactions from one, are these your family members? And then two, are these immigrant success stories of New York? So I was like, okay, this is really fun. Like, I just painted some people that I saw online with the thought that like I was gonna try to explore, you know, people's internalized maybe phobias or perceptions or like prejudices. And that became like the starting point. So then it ended up being painting different men in power. And these men in power, maybe I disagree with politically, but some people would agree with politically. And them being on a wall is in itself a question of their power. But then the way I was painting them was through dilution and through obscuring their facial features and kind of have them look a little cartoony, like in an act of like lampooning. I think that's like a good term to describe the process. So that became a whole thing where people were like, "Oh, are you pro this person's, you know, political agenda, or are you not?" And then other people being like, "Oh, that's, you know, someone I look up to a lot and I voted for." So I like having this gray area where it's like, I'm going to paint something and you guys are going to decide how you feel about it, as opposed to just me painting like a political poster that is like, you know, down with the empire, da da da, and then putting their face, because that's, I'm not giving them anything aside from just my opinion. And I think I prefer having work that asks questions. So that was like, again, the beginning phase. I moved into abstraction over time because I realized that there's so much power in giving less with having the same intentions and having people add on to that, as opposed to, again, just being straightforward. So when I went to grad school, that's when I started doing more observational drawings of land and landscapes. So textured drawings of like whatever it is, like rocks or like wood grains or like foliage. And then zooming into that and distorting it to the point where it's like kind of nothing, but also a lot of different things at the same time. So I would draw, I was in like Red Rock Canyon, for example, which was like an hour away from where I lived in LA, and would just walk around like the canyons. And that's where they filmed Jurassic Park, which is what I like referencing people to. Mm-hmm. There's these massive red rocks that kind of look like fabric. So I took pictures of them and I started drawing them. And then when I was painting intuitively after, they kind of looked like mountains too. And then that's when the combination of like land and body happened. And then that moved on to a more thorough thesis of any place that I exist in, I'm going to try to get like visual cues and observations from surrounding areas. And that all depends on how I'm interacting with the space. And that's going to be kind of like the dictionary in the beginning of the room. And then the main idea is going to be some kind of moment in time that's either politically charged or, significant culturally, that ends up being diluted and diluted again into its own landscape. So it's like creating landscapes, quote unquote, with the land and with things that happen on the land with people. And then that being its own little, space. That makes any sense.
It does. Okay. And especially if one sees your work, which it's fortunately for describe, people, yeah. For people in Kuwait, it's a possibility to see your work. But yes, definitely. I'm wondering, nowadays we can live anywhere, let's say, and we move and we migrate a lot and we spend, extended periods of time living outside of what was our maybe initial place of birth or where we come from genetically or, in any other term. How does the body of an artist, which is has special sensibility to things, body and mind of an artist, react to different places where it is? Desert is such a specific, fragile environment, rich in plants, in animals, even though
history,
obviously history and so much more. And then you move somewhere completely, away from that. There are some artists and writers who write a lot who've moved from here to the States, but they're also in the places of desert, and they constantly, compare and write about it. How was it for you to be also in a different setting?
It was, exciting, because I think I like being in different settings and seeing how I react.
With like perspectives and visually what you see, the impulses you get daily.
Yeah, completely
how much
different.
That,
my practice, when I first got to New York, my practice started with just painting people and portraits, because I was just so overwhelmed with millions of people and interacting with them daily and being, on subways with them and being in big crowded spaces. And then that, had to be rerouted to like my own cultural perspective of things, which is like, okay, then I'm going to talk about Arab people, da da da. And then moving to LA, all the work kind of expanded scale-wise too, because of the space that I had in the studio, but also because the landscapes are so vast and flat to a certain degree, that the work became also vast and like flat. And I started doing more landscapes and more mountainous shapes and more minimal colors. So like New York was packed of like oil paints and thick impasto and colors and like layering. And then when I got to LA, it was just like very light washes of ink on canvas and like slowly building that up into its own space. And then coming back to Kuwait, or actually I did a residency in Singapore, and that was like the biggest mind shift, because I was in one, a place I've never been in before at all. And then two, there with the intention of just creating art, because I was in a residency as opposed to just like being a tourist and traveling and wanting to see things. So I had a studio and I had access to materials, and obviously the objective of residency is to make work for an exhibition towards the end. So we had that as a direction. And then I was with a bunch of people that have also been recent grads from MFA programs or current MFA students. So it was a very specific environment to be in, also in a completely different new place that I haven't been in before. And that made me rethink what the work was, what my practice meant, because it's different than a place that you live in. And a place that you live in, you have a connection to the land in a way that's different than a place that you're visiting. So that got me thinking a lot about like the politics of tourism, obviously, because, a lot of people see tourism as this like positive thing where you're enriching a place with like your income and you're just going to like learn about the culture. But there are a lot of downsides to tourism, moving people out of their ancestral homelands just to create spaces for hotels and resorts. That's one thing. And then two, like not understanding the flow of how things move, and kind of interrupting that and breaking that. So then I was like, okay, what is my context as a semi-tourist but also artist in this new country that I was invited to, but also a place that I don't have the right to call a home yet. And the practice kind of the language around my practice switched around from being just me doing work about Arabness to me doing work about me in relation to the space. So then the work in Singapore had to be about Singapore, but it was about my interaction with Singapore in relation to its history and what I understood from it. So the project itself was pretty fun. I was thinking about mapping at that time, which is also something I did with the residency in Promenade, which I'm sure we'll talk about soon, I hope. But the practice or the theme was understanding the violence of map making, what does it mean to make a map, and what does it mean to render a 3D space into 2D? What kind of implications are you creating? And how am I an agent in that? So I tried to map out my own walking routes in Singapore, and after researching a bunch about the history, like how Iran had a huge part in their like colonization, but also the Brits, and then to a certain degree the trade routes with like Malaysia, India, and then Kuwait, Qatar. There was like a bunch of like Khaliji Arab countries that had influences in Singapore's like creation as this like hub, this port. So I was mapping out my way around Singapore and then leading towards the street called Arab Street, which is the first street that Arabs landed in Singapore. And they ended up just putting up these shacks and sharing, fabrics and spices and whatever else we were doing at that time. And that sort of built up over time to be like the slightly more brown space in Singapore, which is really interesting. So like a lot of people from India and Malaysia were coming in, and then the Persians came in somehow, and then that became a street of just like Aladdin's version of what Arab means, which is like this culmination of like all these different cultures that they just wanted to segment in one side so that they can have the other side for everyone else. So I thought that was really interesting that like seeing that space as layered in terms of history, and seeing time happen not linearly but like in a stack. And so I'd walk around and like draw from observation different textures of like surfaces, walls, floors, and everything. And then I'd also do palm sets, which is like getting a sheet on a surface and then rubbing charcoal on it so you can get the reverse kind of textured image from underneath. And then taking video footage, mostly on like phone cameras of me walking around the space. Sorry. Of me walking around the space. So I put all of those together and they came out into three different drawings, like some with pencil and some with charcoal. And then this video that was like a silent video piece because it was projected on a TV screen with a glass wall to outside, which I've never done before. It's always like that a video shown inside a space or in a theater, or a closed off gallery that's inaccessible at certain times of day, but this was on 24/7 projecting to the outside street. So that made me think really hard about what I wanted to do in a space, and I wanted to be intentional about how I was interacting with it, understand my own history as like an Arab person, in that space. And then what does it mean for me now to be there to do things?
This residency came after you have finished
In LA,
in
after LA.
LA, and it was your first residency of that sort.
Yes, definitely.
So in terms of residencies, you've mentioned the one you've done here at Promenade Culture Center. We're very glad to see when artists who have done, you know, something before and have obviously participated in different residencies and are not, you know, upcoming, they already have made either their mark or created a niche for themselves and so on. We're very happy to see them still come and apply for a small residency that that we host here at the center. I think very highly of residencies, and I think that some of the most amazing things in artists' work come out of them. What are they for you? I know you are currently in a residency as well. What is it about the residencies or the specific residencies you choose that somehow upgrade? Do they upgrade what you do, or it's a personal growth, or it's just a good experience?
Yeah, it's all of these things. Sometimes more so, like in degrees that are different than each other. Like for me, Singapore was so significant because one, I got to access a different type of the art world, and we got to be coupled with different curators that work in other, you know, art fairs or like exhibitions, museums, and stuff. So that's like that kind of access is different, and being with different kinds of people as well. And then in Kuwait, I did the SEDI one, which is completely different because it's about like getting in tune and in touch with your, like, you know, Kuwait's indigenous ancestral practices. And then with Promenade, it's very much like this, you have a space, you have funding, which I think is great because not a lot of residencies do that for people. And then you have, you know, access to a really cool team like you guys and Farah and Shahad, and the right kind of audience too, that's receptive to the work. It's not pushed into a certain theme. There is a theme, but you're not cornering us to produce a certain kind of work. So there is that freedom. And the biggest part for me about residencies is time. Like you're able to have time to work on your practice as opposed to like having a job and then having the practice be like an after work thing. So I'm doing a residency with Hanna, which is their, I think, their first ever. And it's going to be, it is in their space right now in Shuir, in the design district. So they're renting out that space as a gallery, but in the summer, because there are no shows, it's going to be a studio. So I'm going to be in there basically making a mess, and everyone's welcome to pass by. We're going to start posting about it soon. We're just like in the phase of like setting up and moving in and getting some curtains and doing all that fun stuff. But all of this is going to, culminate into an exhibition at the end of September, which will also be a solo show, with Hanna. And I've been part of Hanna for a while now. It's an incredible concept of a gallery, which is like forwarding mostly like femme Arab artists, and they have connections like here and in some parts in Paris, and then all over the Gulf actually. And yeah, it's been really fun. Like they have really cool exhibitions and combinations of artists. Like the group shows are always good. But I'm like really happy about the programming in Kuwait, which is their first physical space because they opened as an online gallery that's kind of like that does pop-ups in different countries and spaces. But now we have like a real physical space so we can have more continued programming. And they had really incredible shows like Iman Ali's show recently and Reem's show. Oh my gosh, paintings. Mashael, like, yeah, so many to name. I'm like losing memory, but all of them were really fun and deep and conceptual and well executed, well curated, really cool writing, publications. Oh, which is also going to be part of the residency, is doing my first publication, which I'm very excited about. Getting down to the nitty gritty of picking like the paper and the binding and the fonts and all that. So I'm very excited.
Well, we hope to come and visit while you're in the process and then afterwards for the exhibition. I am also curious about you coming back to Kuwait.
Yeah.
And
big move.
Yes, the probably tectonic after years spending in certain places that have really, really inspired you, but that are very different. Now, coming home is never a bad thing, but at the same time, now you're finding your way as an adult and a practicing artist, which is very different.
Absolutely.
How was that for you? And are you still finding kind of the frame for that kind of life?
Yeah, moving back was a big decision to make. But I felt like it was the perfect timing, to be honest, because I got back here in like September 2023, and then like October 7 happened, and then I was like, if I was in the States right now, I'd be losing my mind, and I would probably like quit all my jobs and be on the streets protesting the whole time, in a place that didn't want to like listen, and like, you know, being in the belly of the beast at a time like this is like really intense. And a shout out to all my friends that are still surviving. But yeah, coming back to Kuwait, being in a space that's supportive, that, you know, you're able to speak about issues like this, you're able to fundraise. My first job when I got back in September, in October, was to start curating. So the first big like curated show I did was called Palestinian Art Stands. And it's a bunch of Palestinian artists from a private collection in Kuwait. Mm-hmm. And some of the work was up for sale for donations. And it felt like I was part of something that was important and necessary, and I could actually use my skills as an artist or curator to do something useful.
Because the work becomes meaningful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. Otherwise, I'd have to, you know, censor, or like, a lot of my friends got kicked out of their own shows because they wanted to speak up in the States. So, yeah, it was just like a horrible time. It still is. I mean, it's, you know, funding in the arts in the States is like going down exponentially. And a lot of people are resorting to having multiple jobs and not being able to pursue art as a career, and getting very disillusioned with like art and culture as a method of expression, which I completely understand. But yeah, so coming back into Kuwait, trying to figure out how things work here. Everything is so slow in comparison to New York, where like, you know, you plan your day by like the minute. And here it's like maybe two or three things can happen in a day because you're spending most of your time in a car and most of your time with, you know, people that show up late for fun. And I can like go on forever. But yeah, it was a big shock. I'm kind of lucky that I get to have my own space at home. I know a lot of people don't have that privilege and have to kind of move in with family. So I'm glad I'm not in like that boat where I need to be. You know, the daughter and the niece and the cousin and the granddaughter and all that stuff. I still do. I have to, but it's not like a huge part of my life or like something that takes over my life. But yeah, trying to figure out what the scene was here was really interesting. Because a lot of what's happening, a lot of the cool stuff that's happening is not really posted online or shared. It's very private or protected, I would say, because of how maybe tense the outside environment can be. So you kind of have to have that closed offness, not necessarily gate kept, but just like, you know, protected. So that took a while to figure out and get used to. And then I was lucky to, I think I did the residency like a few months into coming back. So that helped me figure out where the art scene was, and the different
kinds of
people.
Where is the art scene?
Where is truly?
How do you feel about the art scene? We talk a lot about are Kuwaiti artists or Kuwait-based artists represented enough in the Gulf? Is there enough mobility of artists? Is there enough exchange? How much are they valued here? Are they in touch? Do we need more like, you know, like non-formal organizations gathering what artists do? Do we need more support from the state in terms of cultural policies? I mean, questions are endless.
Yeah.
But generally, how do you feel about the actual art scene?
Hours about this.
Yeah.
I think it's really promising. I think right now a lot of people are coming back and a lot of people are taking art as like a serious move. And
that's great to hear. We hear that a lot. That stance comes out a lot.
I'm super hopeful. I think Yani, I don't think it's fair to compare ourselves to the rest of the Gulf because I think the biggest difference is a lot of the other countries are, as you said, like state funded and state supported, which can be a good thing if you're thinking financially, but could
Yeah,
also
but
be a
the
hindrance if you're
top-down
thinking,
approach, yes.
yeah. So I think what's great about the art scene in Kuwait is that it's still in a DIY phase where you can kind of mold it and create the art world as it's moving. Not to say that it hasn't existed for the longest time. I
Yes.
mean, we had the first gallery in the Gulf back in the 60s, still standing. So the people are here, the thoughts are
Yeah.
here, the artists are here. It's just a matter of like getting them outside of the underground or the inside studio life or in outside of their little artist caves to interact with the public audience and to real Kuwait, and I understand the hesitance that a lot of artists have with that because there is generally maybe less of an appreciation for art and culture here than there is anywhere else. I think that's mostly due to the fact that like maybe rent is expensive, so then having physical spaces where people
It's
are renting their
difficult, yeah.
own little, artist-run galleries or like workshop spaces or studios, that can help a lot in getting the word out there. And also, it's not really ingrained in our education system, which I think is like the first thing we should be working
Oh
on.
yes, there's nothing without that kind of support at the early age, and that
Exactly.
understanding that creates a general understanding of the importance of it. But
Exactly.
now that you have mentioned studios, I'd like us to hear about your studio.
Yeah, love to
So,
see it.
among all of the things that you're doing, you've managed to create also something like that, with the
Yeah.
purpose of showcasing probably also not just what you do, but potentially what others do, but also, and we didn't mention a lot about it, act as an educator, which is an important part of who you are.
Yeah.
Why did you name it 11?
Yeah.
I am joking, but you could answer that
I will
too.
answer because it's funny.
Such a cool name, yeah. And how is that going?
It's going really well. We're on a little break because of the summer, and it's just too hot to do
Everybody
anything.
deserves a little bit of break.
Yeah,
Yeah, even
we went
artists.
super hard last season.
Yeah.
We launched in November 11, actually, in 2024. Yeah, 2024. And it's called Studio 11 because it's studio number 11 on the floor of Safat Studios. We did not think creatively about it at all, but we like the number 11. And 22 is my lucky number, so 11, it's just numerology stuff. It started as a space where I wanted to. So I have my own studio at home, but it's in the basement and it's kind of inaccessible to most other people that don't live in the house. So it's hard to host there and it's hard to have people over for studio visits and talks and all that stuff. So I wanted a physical space outside where people could come in and share thoughts and experience things. Esil Yakup, who you had earlier, which I loved her episode, had just hit me up and was like, "We have an open studio. Do you want to grab it?" And I said, "Yes, absolutely. Safat Studios is an awesome place." And it reminds me so much of New York because a lot of the studio spaces there are like a single floor or like a full building. And it's just like a million different studios and artists living next to each other and working next to each other. So yeah, I ran towards that and was like, "Let's do it." We got a really cool logo designed by Azam Al-Hassan, who's like this awesome graphic designer, and I really like the mix of like Arabic and English. And we started doing workshops. That was the first kind of community engagement thing that we did in the space. So I did a lot of workshops about like ink painting or like abstract drawing, and intro to drawing for people that just wanted to try things out for the first time, and then a little bit more advanced class for practicing artists. And then we did a bunch of different courses over like several weeks. And then we did stuff for kids as well, which I love doing.
As an
And then
educator, what is your orientation?
I have taught all ages from like 3 to 65 in different scenarios. I taught at the grad school that I graduated from for a semester after graduating, which could have been a more long-term position if I stayed in the States, which was, another decision I made. That I sometimes think about and regret, but I don't regret. And then I also teach in Kuwait. I've taught high school students. I teach kids as well sometimes, like 3 to 5 year olds with barely any motor skills, but a lot of fun, a lot of creativity, and they inspire me a lot. And then all the ages
This is
in
what
between.
I wanted to ask, what you get out of it. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Because you want to set a goal and a result, either, you know, ignite something in these participants or, you know, show them a skill or teach them. But also, what do you get out of that? Because I want my next question, and actually something we can connect in this one question, is what inspires you and what gets you, you know, to step into another day and what is your personal growth related to, or a growth of an artist?
Big questions. I think what I get out of educating, I mean, I learn a lot while teaching. So that's like a big thing for me, is like if I'm unable to explain something, I'll have to know more about it, or in the explanation of something, I'll see where the holes are in the plot, and that can help me further my own ideas. But that's like the, you know, maybe 1% side of it. The rest is like, in the cheesiest way, just like seeing that like aha moment happen in someone's brain, where they can connect what's happening inside their brain with their hands on a sheet, and feeling successful about that can trigger like multiple things in their futures, where they're open to creating without the anxieties of not knowing how to, or feeling that they need to know how to create. Because I mean, essentially, like, all established artists are still trying to go back into their, like, childhood self of expression without all of the labels and limitations and anxieties of what we deem art as art nowadays. So being an educator is kind of, like, pushing that. And a lot of my teaching is not just technical. It's teaching you how to think creatively, and how to, like, get over those boundaries in your head that you that are placed there by whatever society or yourself or, like, whatever. And kind of just getting in tune with your, like, yourself, like, your inside genuine intuitive self. That's what I get out of it. I love that feeling. And I think...
And how do you rest and get ready for creating more? You have your ways.
Yeah. There's a lot of recharging that has to happen. There's like three forms of recharging. One is just like exerting excess energy. And that comes from like, you know, like working out or swimming or yoga or, you know, dancing. Cause I also, again, I mentioned this, but like DJing is like an art form in itself, because you are guiding people's bodies in a space to express and release energy. So that's like a huge part of recharging is release. But then there's like the taking in, which is like maybe watching movies and like reading books and listening to music and playing music and all of that stuff. And then the other is just like full on rest, which is like meditation, sleep, good health and diet, stretching, you know, just like quiet boredom
and,
time.
The forgotten things. Yeah. The things that we at some point used to forget.
Yeah.
How important they are for us to function.
No, super important. I can't go a day without meditating. I feel like I'd like lose my mind a little bit. Like, it's important to come back to
it. Good that you found it as your way. And some of the plans you've already shared with us, but any big plans also coming up, or at least ideas, or maybe something you would like to suggest our viewers or listeners to go and check out and see. And you know, maybe it's a restaurant. It's not an art gallery. Anything that Razan would suggest us to do to find ourselves a little.
For sure. I recently curated some playlists for Mia, the restaurant in Aswa Mall.
Cool.
So if you want to go listen to some cool tunes and eat some really, really good food by the chef Aziz Deshti, he's awesome. And his food is like actually good. It's not just like, it's not cool, like good. It's like, there's no mayo.
Okay, good.
Maybe a little, but like it's not like, you know, covered in sauce and all that stuff. Yeah. It's like genuine food. That, and definitely come by the studio. Even when we're offline, we're still hosting things that people want to do. So if you have ideas for running.
You're sharing on your media, right? We'll know where to go and, okay.
Yeah, but it's also just open. We don't like, you know, post enough open calls. Maybe I should do that. But I like when it's organic, and people just approach us and they're like, you know, I want to host a workshop in the summer. I'll be like, you can use the space. Like the space is everyone's space. I know a lot of people say that and then they charge you for things. We're not charging you for things. You can come in and use the space. And yeah, be there with your folks. We do reading groups that are happening also kind of organically. And film screenings. I recently got a projector for my birthday, so I'm very ha happy
Very
and
nice.
excited. So we're gonna watch like a bunch of art films. We have a movie subscription and a
Nice.
Plex server. And yeah, obviously the show at the end of September at Vanna.
Yes.
Come by
Okay.
to that.
That's that will come in no time. Well, the time is famous to pass by very quickly here at Culture
Yeah, that
Corner.
flew by.
Yes, and there are probably many other things to talk about, and we unfortunately have the same feeling with every guest we have, but that's just another reason to see you again. Razan, thank you
Absolutely.
so much for today and this conversation.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Always, thank you.